Computer, initialize holosuite.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm your host, Perry.
And I'm your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 1, Episode 6, Q-Less. Before we continue, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Spotify as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Absolutely. And as my co-host here said, we are talking about the episode Q-Less. So let me give you a quick rundown of the episode. This episode starts in the Replimat, a different area of the station that we get to see this time. It's different from Quark's Bar. It's more of a subdued setting. And here we see Julian Bashir, our doctor, and Chief Miles O'Brien, our engineer, seeming to relax, enjoying a little downtime. Bashir is trying to impress some Bajoran woman with his overall intelligence when that is interrupted by Commander Sisko ordering him to one of the docking rings. There's been an incident, and the ship, the shuttlecraft Ganges, is sealed up, and they can't get in. So he runs to the docking ring to help them free Dax and the random ensign that happens to be on the shuttle with her at the time. Kira tries to phaser the door down, but Sisko's like, yeah, you can't do that. It's solid duritanium. You're never going to be able to get that door open. They eventually get the manual release to fire. The door opens. They get Jadzia and the ensign out along with their surprise passenger, who is none other than Bash, who everybody should remember was Captain Picard's on-again-off-again girlfriend from Star Trek The Next Generation. So, of course, this throws some people through a little bit of a loop because they were coming from the Gamma Quadrant. As far as anyone knew, there were no humans in the Gamma Quadrant, so what was Bash doing there? Bash makes the offhand reference that it had been 12 years, something like that, since she had seen Earth, and everybody's wondering how she got to the Gamma Quadrant. After they go to the infirmary and they're checked out, Bash retrieves her stuff and she looks for a secure place to unload the various artifacts, trinkets, and so forth that she has gathered while she was in the Gamma Quadrant. She heads to the local, I think it's the assayer's office, and gets a lockbox where she deposits several different items. There's a necklace, there is a dagger, and there's this one gentleman who's in there who seems to be thoroughly unimpressed with every item that she pulls out. He describes them in the most general of terms, which always kind of irked me because I was like, if you're supposed to be like security, wouldn't you want to do a better job of, you know, saying the dimensions, the weight, and so forth? He's just kind of pulling like a Lady Justice blind test of the weight of things.
A bag of assorted jewels at one point.
He's just thoroughly done with it. Clearly he's been doing this job for far too long. Until, of course, she gets to this particular black box. She opens the box, and there's this very impressive stone jewel gem in there that's glittering. It seems to have its own light. There's no real description for it. It is quite impressive. And she puts that in there as well, and all with the intention of coming back at a later date after she's arranged travel for herself elsewhere. Around this same time, they start noticing a couple of different happenings going on in the station, different little anomalies, quirk popping up here and there, and there's nothing really, I guess, dramatic to them. It's just kind of odd. Around this time, also, O'Brien, as he's escorting Vash to her quarters, he ends up running into, or no, he doesn't run into Q, but he sees someone else interacting with Q. And he
sees Bashir interacting with
Q. That's right.
Yep.
That's right. And immediately, obviously, since O'Brien's from the Enterprise and knows all the trouble that Q put the Enterprise crew through, he lets Sisko know. Now, Sisko immediately jumps to the conclusion that whatever the situation is on the station, the problems that they're having, they have to be related to Q. So now he's ready to have his own confrontation with Q. Which leads us to the best scene ever, which is where Q brings them into Quark's bar, and they have their first little sparring of words until they actually legitimately spar. Q changes the scenery. Now they're boxing. At first, Sisko seems to hold off until finally, after Q lands a couple of menial blows, Sisko knocks him down. And leads to the best, in my opinion, best exchange ever, in which Q's like, "You hit me. Picard never hit me." And Sisko's like, "I'm not Picard."
Not Picard.
Which I love. Just like, yeah, we know. It's like, it's awesome. So now Q is now all the more fascinated by Sisko because Sisko has proven himself to be easier to provoke than the more restrained Picard ever was. It's clear that Vash and Q have some kind of relationship. Q appears in Vash's quarters. He's pleading with her to take him back. And this is where we kind of see the story that was alluded to from The Next Generation, in which obviously Q had taken Vash into the Gamma Quadrant. At some point, their relationship had become strained. She separated herself from him and had made her way back to the Alpha Quadrant by herself. Q is now wanting her to take him back. He, of course, makes it very difficult for her to do anything, even unpack, for example. But she is adamant about being done with him. Throughout the rest of the episode, Q keeps popping up, even as there's all these other mysterious goings on the station, different incidents. Again, they're getting increasing severity, and Q continues to stress upon Vash that she really needs to be with him, even at one point reducing her to a very sickly, frail form, saying basically she would have died without him. Throughout all this, Vash also arranges for an auction for those various items that she brought from the Gamma Quadrant. She's trying to sell them. Of course, this means that she goes to Quark to arrange it, because Quark is the only person on the station who has enough seedy, underhanded connections to bring people in who will pay top dollar for the items that she has. The auction goes off. Vash starts to explain the items that she's brought in a very historical, dry context, which seems to bore everybody in attendance to death, which leads Quark to take over. Quark, using his natural salesmanship, increases the interest and the value in the items, and they continue to sell off certain things until, of course, they arrive at the final piece. Meanwhile, the station has now been caught in a weird gravitational pull that is drawing the entire station into the wormhole. There doesn't seem to be anything they can do to stop it, nor can they really seem to pinpoint what is causing it. They just know the station can't go through the wormhole, because if it does, it'll pretty much be ripped apart. So now they're trying to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, Sisko is still adamant that Q must be the one that's behind this, until finally Q leaves with enough clues to let them know that it's not him, but they should be looking elsewhere. They finally start to pick up on some random energy patterns, which leads them to Quark's bar, where, of course, we find that elusive gem from the earlier part of the episode that is giving off this rampant energy signal. They beam the thing into space just in time for some kind of alien creature to emerge and for it to enter the wormhole and stop dragging the station along with it. So the episode ends with the station now back in its original place. Vash has decided that maybe she would give Q one more try, and everyone goes about their business because there's really no way for them to stop Q from doing whatever he wants. So yes, that's my episode summation in a nutshell. I know I left out certain things, but as I say every week.
Oh, it's quite detailed.
Well, thank you. But
yeah,
again, I know there are some things that I left out. And again, as I say every week, if you want to know what those things were, go watch the episode. We'll still be here.
That's true.
Be here when you come back.
Yeah, this was a fun episode. I find it fun. I think Q is a great character. He's hilarious. As I said last week, no Q. And I definitely feel that way. Q is that one character. Whenever you see him, part of you is filled with dread. But I love to hate Q. I realized it in watching this episode. Hating Q is what's so much fun about the character. He doesn't take no for an answer. If he wants something, he is persistent, and he always deflects. Every time someone has a response, Q, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? He has some snarky response that is just hilarious, and this episode, it made me realize why the character is... I mean, I assume he's a fan favorite. I mean, he's been at least in two shows now.
I would definitely say that he is a fan favorite. And I would not even... to the point where, even though, like, I don't personally like Q, I know there are some people who really, really love him. I couldn't call him one of the characters that people love to hate, because there isn't much hate for him. When Q was first introduced as a character, he was listed as the enigmatic Q. And I think that that is one thing that... he definitely nails in his persona is everything right. That he does, there's some kind of game, clue, riddle to what he's doing. He never gives the full answer, and he never tells the whole truth. He basically right. leaves us to figure it out every time. And even here in this scenario, he does. He comes in, he has his little bit of fun, especially when he has his sparring match with Cisco. But ultimately, uh-huh. he gives just enough to say that, you know, you guys are focused in the wrong place. I am not the real concern here. You should be looking right. elsewhere. And eventually yeah. they clue in that, hey, yeah, okay, as much as we know about Q and as much as he antagonizes us, in this instance, he is not our problem. We should look elsewhere. Right. And they do so in yeah. the nick of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hilarious. While they're trying to figure things out, he goes up to Ops and starts messing with our crew and says, the Enterprise crew would have figured this techno babble out hours ago. Meanwhile, you guys are here still, you know, fighting over, like, you know, he says to Kira, like, we know you want his job, pointing to Cisco. And when O'Brien confronts him, he's like, who are you? You're one of the little people from the Enterprise, right? Totally dismissive. And you think, along with Cisco, that, oh, it must be Q that's causing these problems. Every time we've seen him in the past, he was the one who was causing all sorts of mayhem to occur. You know, whisking people off to Sherwood Forest, for example. But no, it turns out this episode he was actually not the one causing the issues. It was the egg, this colorful gem, this large colorful gem was actually an egg of some sort for some stingray looking creature that as soon as they beam it off the ship, it hatches out and flies away. So it was kind of a passive problem in the sense that it wasn't like an active malevolent?
Yes, malevolent.
Malevolent, that's a fun word to say. Force in the you know, on the station. It was just trying to hatch and go about its way. And but Q is malevolent, as we know him. He is, well, I don't know if malevolent's quite the right word.
Yeah.
He is that, but he's not.
He's more of a puck. Like a puckish yeah. character. He definitely plays the part of red herring here in this episode very right. well. And they hang a right. lot on that for that misdirect throughout much of the episode. And right. and speaking real quick on the hatchling that emerges from what we now realize is an egg that's containing this life form. They beam that whole thing into space. Not just the egg. They beam the box and all of it. And as soon as it emerges in space, free of the station, that creature comes out. And I've always wondered, okay, so was it just the egg, or was the box also part of the whole cocooning process? Because where did it go? Like, we never see it again. Like, the whole thing disappears in light, and the creature goes off and does its thing. And I'm like, okay, but, I mean, that box... Like, where was that box? Because, I mean, if you think about it, that box is pretty special to be containing that egg that's emitting this energy that has the ability yeah. to drag the whole station into yeah. the wormhole. What's right. that box made out of?
That's Vosh, what I want to know. She's got some questions to answer.
Yeah, several things there. Yeah, from? Where'd she get that box? You know,
yeah.
So I want to see where that comes back up. But, of course, we don't yeah. get to see that again. And mm-hmm. and as you mentioned earlier, yes, Q does appear in Ops, and he's making fun of them for not being the well-put-together Enterprise crew, which I always felt like part of this was the writers playing into the, I'm sure, the negative feedback they had gotten from various critics and fans of Deep Space Nine at the time, you know, and how much it wasn't Deep Space, or it wasn't Next Generation, right? How much these characters were right. not like the next-gen counterparts that we had gotten to know for the past, at this point, 6 years. Because TNG had been running for so long. So,
right.
you know, he even says, oh, I thought that Riker was going to get the... No, I'm sorry, he doesn't say that. That was another show. Spoilers! but yes, he makes fun of O'Brien. You know, again, aren't you one of the little people? It's little digs like that.
Yeah.
That really get me.
Right. Yeah. One thing I love about Q is that he always knows how to get under people's skin. He knows how to... He insults people in such a particular way, which, again, I love to hate him. That's what makes him so funny, because as someone who you are frustrated by, you feel for the characters, you want them to succeed, and here comes Q, and he just makes a big mess of things. And, like, Q, like, I want to reason with you. I want to make a pitch. I want to say this is what I think, what I feel, and Q just doesn't care. He wants his way. He wants the things that he is interested in to happen, and he's kind of creepy about it. I mean, the way he treats Vosh in this episode, he's basically, it seems to me, I think people will agree, you know, he's basically kind of like jealous of Picard on some level. Actually pretty much what happens on the Next Generation episode, where she goes off with Q, Vosh goes off with Q because, you know, Picard was her original, you know, dalliance, and then Q came along and was like, I'm going to take Vosh off to explore the universe. Mm-hmm. You can't do that, Picard. I can. And then to find her 2 years later being all like, okay, I'm done. I can't handle you. I don't want to be with you anymore. Like, he can't take it. He's like, no, I have to like convince her that like I really am the best. And when he forces her to like endure all of the painful things that she would have experienced if she had just been in the Gamma Quadrant by herself, it's like, man, he really is petty. Like, he can't just graciously be a guardian angel type. He has to like make sure you appreciate his presence.
Right.
He's hilarious in that way.
I've always believed that his fascination with Vash is not because of her per se. It was more because she had successfully pulled one over on Jean-Luc, something that, you know, Q had failed to do in numerous occasions. He even remarks, if I remember correctly in the episode, is that if I had known, I would have appeared to you as a woman, because he was so interested in trying to get Picard's into the mind interest. Of Picard. So yes, that was his whole fascination with Vash and taking her around and doing different things with her. He was more trying to understand her because she had done something he could not. And I think that's another reason why he's also so quick to not just save her, but also demonstrate why she needed him to save her. Because, one, he wants her to appreciate him the way that she obviously appreciates Jean-Luc. But also, I don't think he would ever have let her die, because I think that if it had ever gotten back to him, back to Picard, that Vash had died, that
on his watch,
right? That then I think that, you know, Q knows that his any interactions with Jean-Luc would have been over and done with immediately.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly. Picard could have always thrown it back in his face, and it's Q who throws things back in other people's faces. So. Yeah. But on that, I want to just quickly say that this episode, I don't know if this episode could be made today, because Julian, Dr. Bashir, like the way he and everyone, like Vash is the center of like the three different characters are romantically interested in her. And that's not even including Jean-Luc. We have Q, we have Dr. Bashir, and we have Quark. Dr. Bashir is, you know, as we said, as you were doing the recap, he starts the episode off by telling some ridiculous story about his final tests in school, and he makes that into some highly romanticized version of like he was about to die or something, and it turns out I didn't answer a question correctly on my test.
Mistaken the postganglionic fiber for a preganglionic nerve. I've heard the story so many times. Yes.
You said it perfectly. I told you guys, Perry has a memory that's like a steel trap. Anyway, and then when he hits on Vash, he's like, yeah, you know, I wish there was something wrong with you. Then I could keep you here. It's like, creep much? Like, is this a line you've tried before?
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think this episode, especially when it comes to Bashir, he's probably one of the few characters that ages poorly. At least when you look at him through this first season, maybe even the second one, we'll see as we get there. Because he's so self-absorbed. And we're supposed to take that in some way as both charming and endearing. Like, there's very few people that ever really call him out on it. Jadzia, who is a foot and a half smarter than he ever will be, as we've already discovered, you know, she seems to tolerate it to no end. Kira's the only one who seems to come close to wanting to put him in his place, but even she, you know, is restrained on that a bit.
Right.
And he just walks around with this very naive air of being in love with himself, and it is insufferable. And, I mean, kudos again to the writers, if that was what you were going for, because, man, did you guys nail it. And Alexander Siddig acting that out every time. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if a person could really, truly be that in love with themselves. But again, he nails it. And I mean, so yes, great acting, great casting. You guys did a great job there. You gave us a character who, for the first time in the Starfleet uniform, we don't want to identify with. At least not now. I mean, it's just so, it just makes you just kind of recoil a little bit listening to him talk about himself to such a extreme degree, you know. His fascination with from the Bajoran woman he's talking to in the beginning suddenly to Vash, and obviously his never-ending infatuation with Jadzia, just are the things that kind of keep him from being, to me, an endearing character, even though they, it seems like they try really, really hard to get us to be like, in spite of these things, we should really like him. So
You're right. At this point, he hasn't necessarily done anything that's like, oh man, like he endears himself to us.
He has, and this is again, this is still season one. We're at episode six.
Oh yeah.
So we got a long ways to go for him to, you know, pull himself out. But man, is he digging a fine, deep hole to keep
There's a bit of a climb he's gonna have to work himself out. But that's not the only person who takes an interest in her. Not only does Q, as you said earlier, like when she's trying to unpack, like repack her bags with his magical ability to just blink things where he wants them, basically like forcing, like he's basically insinuating, like, I can make you do what I want. But then when Quark shows up, I think you had said that she went looking for an auction. It's actually Quark who shows up at her suite, if you will, or her room, and says, "Hey, I'd like to offer you my ability to, you know, I can work out an auction for you." And the moment when she is able to get him on his back and rubs his ears, and I don't know what it's called when they get their ears rubbed, and she's apparently pretty good at it. Quark is very happy to have let her do that, and it's just one of the, this whole episode I just was watching, I was like, man, this woman, I mean, she totally kind of seduces Picard in that episode where she appears. But in this one, she is not having to do a thing almost. They're just throwing themselves at her. And, well, I guess she does take care of Quark, if you will. But,
there's one Ferengi trait that they keep consistent. So, I mean, I can't really fault them on that. Is that Ferengi are very sex-focused. I was trying to look at
that seems to be true.
So, yes. And obviously, there's also a lot of a lot of prominence on their ears. It's more than just hearing. There's obviously a lot of other things that go on with their ears that make them very sensitive spots for them. So it doesn't seem like you have to do much, because they don't make this Umox giving seem to be particularly difficult. Seems like anybody can do it. You just got to get close to the right Ferengi to do it. You know, and obviously, since the Ferengi don't seem to be, you know, particularly hung up about that, it's just like, if you're willing and they want it, then there you go. You know, so I'm not necessarily going to say that, you know, Quark was so much interested in her physically, because he definitely stays more financially focused than anything else. But
for sure,
he does not turn down the opportunity for pleasure. So, I mean, and again, that still is very much in keeping with established Ferengi culture that we've seen so far. So yeah,
that's right.
I'm not gonna let Quark be one that she just kind of, you know, smoozes over, basically. So yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw this gem that turns out to be the egg for this alien creature, I initially thought it was the what are those the gems that for the first episode
the orbs.
Yeah, the orbs. I thought it was an orb.
I did too.
She found an orb.
I have to admit, when I first watched it, I thought the same thing. When I saw it, I thought she had found like, because you know, I mean, we knew what they looked like, you know, because we'd already seen a couple by this point, you know. So I thought that maybe she had found like an older version of one, or maybe it was malfunctioning somehow, because it wasn't as bright as the other ones, and it certainly wasn't moving the way the other ones tend to revolve, you know. So that's what my first thought was too. So I could see why you would go there.
Yeah, I initially thought like that was going to be what was going to happen, is something about, oh, it turns out that she found one of the, they're called the Tears of the Prophets, is that right? That she found one of those, and that that was going to be a big deal. So it turns out it's not, which I was a little disappointed by. I was like, oh, it's not as big a thing to the storyline as it could have been. But you know, it did from the first moment you saw it, it was like, okay, this is gonna be important.
It was definitely,
and that moment, I love the moment in the promenade in Quark's when Quark and Voss sit down and they're talking about the auction, and they get to that item, and she goes, oh, this is, I think it's gonna be the item that'll be like the last final item. And Quark, being the, you know, sneaky little devil that he is like, oh, that doesn't look all that important. You know what? I'll just take it off your hands for, like, I don't know, 7 bars of gold pressed platinum. And she's like, it's worth at least 50.
Like, it's worth 50 and he goes, like, times as much.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's what she says, yeah. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'll do, you know, 15. And just don't tell anyone I'm so generous. And, like, she catches on immediately. And you just love it because it's, that's Quark. That's like, he's the sneaky little guy that he is. And Vosh is just, she catches on pretty quickly. Oh, wait a minute. You agree with me. This thing's valuable. You're just trying to get one over on me. So their relationship with this episode is actually the most fun part of the episode. The relationship with Q, you just get the bitter ending, the bitter breakup part of their relationship. You know, they have a history together now, but it's turned sour. But between Vosh and Quark, we have this blossoming business relationship between the two of them, and at the end she's like, oh, I'm done, I'm gonna go back to Earth, I'm just gonna live a nice quiet life. And Quark goes up to her and says, you know, you couldn't go back to some quiet life, you know, you like adventure and doing, you know, all this stuff, you like getting the money and risking things. And she initially rebuffs him, and then Q basically turns her back onto the idea of going back out there. And so at the end of the episode, she's about to go off and do another heist of some kind. She's going to follow Quark's advice.
We're going to assume, like, because she said she was on her way to Vulcan, but she was going to, she asked for directions so that she may divert her path to
exactly.
A stop somewhere else on the way. We don't really know if she does or not. We're kind of left to assume that, yeah, she gets up to some of her old tricks a little bit on the way to wherever it is she said she was going to go.
Right. Yeah, but I just thought it was great. Quark was perfect for her character. You know, the two of them were as thick as thieves within a short amount of time.
Yeah, once again, these two, you know, showing once again that, you know, Armin Shimerman does such a great job as Quark. Which just, it's a joy to see him when he's in his element, and he very much was with her.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
it's just nice to see, and it's another reason why he always continues to be a standout. And they don't overdo it with him, I feel like. Because sometimes when you have characters that are that good, there's an instant temptation to throw them into every scene. But I don't feel like they really do that with Quark. Now, again, we're only 6 episodes in, so things may change. But I feel like so far it's been very even, and I like that. Even, consistent, which keeps me wanting to see him every time he pops up.
Right. Well, what's so funny about him as a character is his greed is just plastered all over his face. Like, when the one, you know, auctioneer, or not auctioneer, but one of the buyers shows up, he's like, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, something and your overflowing purse. And he's like, ah, I can't wait for you to buy stuff. And like during the auction, as he's calling out amounts, and it gets bigger and bigger, 600 bars of gold pressed platinum. Like, he doesn't hide it. He's not trying to be like casual, like, oh yeah, this is definitely, you know, 600. I think this deserves a little more, guys. No, he's like, 600. Like, you're giving it away, bro.
He is losing his mind. Yeah, his greed overwhelms to the point where he almost seems to pass out a little bit from the amount of money he's going to make from this transaction.
The best moment, the best moment is when Q being, he's trying to, you know, kind of mess the whole auction up, because they're at that point they're on to the egg gym thing, and he's like, I'm gonna bid 2,501 bars of gold platinum. So like he's messing with it, and then he says, you know what, 1,000,000. And then Quark is just like,
yeah, that was
a
it.
1,000,000.
That was, it's like one of my favorite scenes from Futurama with the gasping.
Yeah,
just have the doctors run and be like, this man is overgasped, and just pull him off the set because he just couldn't take anymore. I mean, that would have been perfect for him to just swoon from this 1,000,000 bars.
Yeah, gold. Yeah.
If there's anything that would ever take Quark out, that would be it. No, not love, not anything else. No, money.
Yes.
Brought down 1,000,000 bars in front of him, and the man is done.
Yeah, and he's so mad, or not, well, so mad, but he's mad when they when Sisko and the others run in, and they're like, oh, we're going to beam this thing off the station. He's like, but I haven't got paid yet. Like, it's... You can beam it off the station after I get paid. Wait till I get paid.
Exactly.
Then beam it.
He doesn't, because again, you know, the transaction has to be final. He doesn't care what happens before then. As soon as he gets his money, though, you can do whatever you want. So yeah, that was definitely again in keeping with Quark, and I love that too. He's like, he even rushes it along. They come in, everybody's scanning the thing, and he's like, sold. You, so too late, it's done.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So he was trying to hurry up as much as he could, you know, so I love that too.
Yeah. But if, I think Quark is always a standout character from what I can tell.
Absolutely. But of course, we have to talk about the infamous boxing scene. This would not be, you know, this episode would be nothing without it. So again, this is where we see Sisko actually have his first interaction with Q. One-on-one, anyway. Q transports them to Quark's bar. He changes the setting a little bit so that it's like a boxing ring. He's changed their outfits. He's sporting even a little old-school mustache. And he's dancing and jerking all around Sisko, and even punches him a couple of times, which apparently those punches are like nothing because Sisko doesn't even move, you know?
Yeah.
And then finally it's just like they're talking... Sisko gets tired of it. Q goes to throw a punch. Sisko blocks, punches him twice in the gut, and then uppercuts him and knocks him down.
Yeah. You're right. That line. Yes, that line. Picard never hit me. Well, I'm not Picard. That's so great. Like, this was the moment where the show is like, if earlier, or I don't know if it's later, I think it's later that they actually have that moment where it's like, oh, the Enterprise crew would have gotten through this already. Mm-hmm. But this scene comes first, and Sisko's like, this ain't Next Generation, baby. This is Deep Space Nine. I ain't going to handle this.
And once again,
I ain't going to deal with this.
And once again, I'm going to give credit to the writers. I feel like this is a lot of, you know, again, tongue-in-cheek here with stuff that they most likely were hearing at the time about how much this crew was not like the TNG crew, you know, and I mean the Enterprise crew has always and continues to be held up as kind of like that apex paragon crew. Everybody is very well put together. They're all professionals. They're very, very good at their jobs, and all of their conflicts are external, not internal. Whereas here on the station, it's almost the inverse. You've got a lot of characters who are dealing with a lot of internal struggles that spill out into their jobs every which way, and they're just doing their best to hang on. Meanwhile, they're also the station they have to run, you know?
Yeah.
And the comparisons between Sisko and Picard probably were immeasurable at the time. Just constant barrage of this. And instead of them always constantly having to defend Sisko, they gave us a scenario in which, you know, Sisko gets to speak up for himself. And he just plainly states it. I'm not Picard. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, if you had an expectation of him in any way being like Jean-Luc, here he is blatantly telling you, with his fist no less, you know, that he is not like Jean-Luc, you know. And again, it's a scene that I love because for the most part of what we have seen with Sisko here, he's very reserved. You know, we don't really see him thrusting himself in the forefront of things. He very much likes to stand back, and he makes his decisions, and he makes his command orders and things like that from a position of, like, he's been observing. and then he kind of steps forward and lends his voice. And so now we kind of see him step into the forefront here. He's dealing with Q. He's kind of the only one that could be on the level to deal with Q as the command officer, and he smacks him in the mouth. I just love that. I love that he doesn't try to talk him down or anything like that. He just steps forward, and he's like, bam, here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I agree. This this episode also had the moments where, like, the crew, the team, is trying to figure out what's going on the station, and Dax proposes that they do some parts per million. They need to put out some sort of chemical, something like that, and that it'll allow them to trace where the problem is located. But if they put out too much of it, it'll, you know, kill everyone. And O'Brien has this hilarious line. He's like, well, we might solve this problem, but we're all going to die in 4 years if we all get poisoning from this. But Sisko's like, nope, we got to do it. We have a problem. We'll figure that out later. Let's do it. And then later, when the ship is, or sorry, the station is being pulled toward the wormhole, there's another solution. They realize that if they turn the power back on, that will give them further insight into where this, you know, power surge is, or power drain is occurring. And Kira's like, well, if we do that, then we're going to move even quicker and more quick. We're going to move more quickly toward the wormhole. That would be a bad idea. And Sisko's like, we got to do this. So he definitely takes charge on ops. He is definitely the commander and makes some hard decisions. And that was good. It was good to see him having to do that in this episode.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, I said graviton particles. That's what Dax said. That's incorrect. I just looked it up real quick because I wanted to make sure. She says that they should flood the station with ionized tritium gas, and that they can trace the graviton particles, which is what's flowing from the power outage.
Right.
They can then trace it and find out where the outage is coming from. So that was my mistake there. I like to clarify. But and then you're right, Sisko. She does say, you know, the side effect of that is it's toxic. And, you know, if it builds up over a certain amount of time, then they're going to start suffering the deleterious effects of that. And Sisko's like, yeah, but we will all die if we don't figure this out. So, you know, little potential death later versus instant death now if we don't figure this out. So, yeah, let's do this. And I also love that, you know, when Sisko is confronting Q in ops, he says to Q when they're, because this is after they've moved past the fight and they're now back in ops. He says to Q, why don't you go do something constructive, like go torment some Cardassians? Which I love, because, again, showing how he is not like Jean-Luc. Picard never would have told him to go torture anybody else, not even his worst enemy. He never would have tried to brush Q off that way. But Sisko is just like, yeah, we've got better things to do, and these people also annoy me, so why don't y'all all go over there and be annoying together? So I love that he was just trying to be like, yeah, just make that problem go be someone else's for a little bit.
That reminds me, actually, there's that moment in the room where Vosh and Q are talking, and they're debating what they did, you know, what experiences they had. And she says, on this one planet, they called you the God of Lies. And he goes, but they said it like, you know, what does he say? They said it affectionately. And it's so great. Like, that's the perfect cue. Like, she throws a direct barb at him. Look, you have offended a culture so much, they call you the God of Lies. Yeah, but they mean it in a good way. Oh, Q, hilarious. He's hysterical in his cuteness.
so we've talked a lot, obviously, about this episode. There's obviously a lot of great moments, great performances here. But of course, I ask every week, who do you feel like gave the standout performance? Is it one person? Is it a couple of people? Who do you feel like just really makes this episode for us?
Well, I think I'll just have to say that John DeLancey as Q, personifies Q perfectly. He just, from the get-go, he has always filled in that character so well. I think, again, Quark was a good standout here. Going back to Q for a second, like, the last part of this episode, the last scene when Q and Vosh are having their final little, you know, conversation about are you or are you not going to come with me, he says that he liked being with Vosh because she, when he sees a star system, when he sees a vortex, when he sees something out in the galaxy, it's just a bunch of dust to him. But through her eyes, he can see it with wonder. She sees something wonderful. He can see that when he sees it through her eyes, and he's going to miss that. And so in that moment, you finally like get a sense of why Q has always been this character that's always annoying and persistent, and it's like, why is Q the way he is? And then you realize, at least according to that line, that, you know, he's trying to experience something. He can't experience things like we do, or at least not of his own ability. So working with someone else, whether it's Picard or Vosh, you know, he gets to experience life in a way that he can't otherwise. And it's too bad that he doesn't just go with that. He still has to be his weird Q self. He can't just enjoy life like the rest of us do, or at least not be so obnoxious while he does it. But then he wouldn't be Q if he did. So.
And I think that also plays into the larger part of Q's character that we've begun to know from both The Next Generation and what we see here, and even later on when he pops up in other shows. He has a fascination with humanity that's based more on the fact that he is this omnipotent creature that is eons old, just countless years old. He's existed for forever. And right. You know, he's kind of just, he seems to be, anyway, bored with certain things. He doesn't see that wonderment. And you're right. Like the line that he says, because you were just talking about it, so I had to look it up. He says, it's not going to be the same without you. When I look at a gas nebula, all I see is a cloud of dust. But seeing the universe through your eyes, I was able to experience wonder. I'm going to miss that. So and this is something that, again, like I said, he echoes this multiple times with other characters. He says something very similar to Picard, and that's what intrigued him about humanity in the first place, is that humanity's view of the universe as we venture out and explore it is different than his take on it, especially somebody who's been around for a very, very long time. So he gets to experience those things again. He likes that, and that's what keeps bringing him back. And he really likes that no two humans seem to experience the same event the same way. So he can have an experience with Jean-Luc and his crew, and it will be totally different than when he's messing with Sisko and his crew, or any other Starfleet crew that he happens to decide to descend upon. But I do know personally, if I was in that universe and I was on that ship and he appeared, I would absolutely hate it. I don't care. I don't care what else is going on. I would just not I would not like it at all. I get their frustration.
I would have no patience. I totally agree. I would be the one who, like, doesn't, like, after a certain point, like, I'm not going to try and reason with you anymore. I'm going to try and kill you. I don't know how. Q is unkillable, but, like, I'm going to grab a knife, and I'm going to try and put you out of my misery, if you know what I mean. I have to say that that's why I think the writing is so good. I think on a recent episode, you said there's a character that you hate. Is this the character you meant?
Oh, no. We haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking that maybe it's this one.
No.
Because as we've talked and I've listened to you talk, I've been like, it's hilarious. Like, the writers create a character that's annoying and intended to be, like, disliked, and Perry goes there. He's like, I don't like this character.
When we get to this particular character,
I'll know.
You'll know very quickly. You'll know, and I have yet to find anything redeeming about this character. I know many people have tried to look for a redeeming quality, and so far, everyone has failed. Because the more you watch the character, the worse they get, and it's just like, oh my god, like, how can you be so terrible all the time? And even to the point where there are certain lines that this character says that when you hear them, like, it's like you can't not hear it in their voice anymore. People will say it to you later on, and you're just like, to me anyway, I feel it, like this hatred kind of bubble up all these years later. And it's like, man, I every time though, I stop and I'm like, you know what? You guys did a really great job. The writers did a great job. The actor did a great job. You know, stellar delivery here with this particular character, because I do hate them and I love hating them and I will always hate them. But we're not there yet.
Okay, all right. Close. So this mysterious character that's to be hated has not arrived yet.
Now, let me tell you something. Even just speaking about it right now, I was sorely like having to be conscious of my words because I didn't want to give away who it was because it was really – I was like – feeling myself sinking into my hatred, and I knew that it was going to come out. So I was like, "We got to divert the conversation because I'm going to give it away." And I don't.
Well, we know it's not Bashir because we earlier on we said he has a little bit of a hill to climb out of, but we expect he will.
So for me, for standout performances, I'm going to give it to Sisko, and the reason for that is again he steps forward in a big way, and he lets us know right away that he is not like. Picard. I remember when I first watched that, how shocked I was. Like, because it's Q. He's always been this all-powerful. No one would ever hit Q. I mean, as many times as Worf tried, you know, like, no one ever laid a hand on Q when he still had his powers anyway. When he was still the omnipotent Q, no one could lay a hand on him. And for Sisko to not only punch him, but knock him down was fantastic.
Now, the fact that Q even allows that to happen is a little strange, but yeah, you're right.
Which was going to lead me to my conspiracy theory that we're going to discover. The theory is that there is something more to Sisko that allows him to do this thing that no one else could do. So we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
You know, and if you, and when we reach that point, if you agree, because I'll remember and I'll bring this up. And if we reach that point, and we'll see if you agree if that could be something that lends to his ability to knock Q down. But that's
so
all I'm
Sisko
say.
Is a part of the Q continuum. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying there's a conspiratorial theory, conspiracy theory out there that this is there's a reason that Sisko can do what Sisko does. So.
Okay. Huh.
But.
He was empowered by the tears of the prophets. I shouldn't theorize just yet.
No,
okay.
Not yet. You should just wait, watch, and learn. Now that you've brought those up, though, the tears of the prophets, you know, do you remember in the very first episode when Kaiopaka brings the first orb? Or no, Sisko goes to meet Kaiopaka. She gives him his first orb experience. That's when he goes through the whole thing back on the beach with Jennifer and all that kind of stuff. And then it ends. And she tells him that is the orb of time, I believe. It's the green one. And she says to him, there are 9 orbs like that one that had been found.
Yeah.
That alone, I feel like they could have based the entire show run on them discovering all these different orbs and what they do.
Right.
Because it was so different. And to have it thoroughly put in the camp of this is... the next part of the Starfleet mission is to discover these things, I thought would have been so cool. I will give away a little bit of spoiler, but unfortunately we don't get to see all 9, you know, but I really wish that they had done more with that. And who knows, maybe with all the reboots that are going on and the continuations that are going on, maybe in some regard, somebody somewhere will pick that up and give us more of the Bajoran orbs and what they do. That'd be really cool.
So you're
cool.
saying... that Star Trek did Thanos and the 6 gems before Marvel did, basically? Time Stone, Tear of the Prophet, Time...
I don't know when they first did Thanos and the various gems and stones from way back when, but I do know that it was a part of Star Trek before it became part of mainstream Marvel as we know it today.
That's true.
So, yeah. Maybe some... maybe some Marvel writers and directors were fans of Deep Space Nine and ripped off the orbs from them. Everybody copies from everybody else. There's total lacking of originality these days.
That's right. Yep, everyone's just copied from someone else. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I thought that this orange egg gem was another Tear of the Prophet, and... I really was hoping that it was that, so I was disappointed when it wasn't. When it turned into this stingray creature that just floated away, I was like, oh, it was kind of anticlimactic, but it is what it is.
Well, maybe if, you know, the show runs for 7 seasons, maybe if they come back and do like an 8th or 9th season and everybody's older and, you know, this is their way of you know, CGI-ing it or whatever else. That would be a cool thing to see, too. And so,
yeah.
Of course, next question would be, who gave the forgettable performance? Who could we have done without? Who did we just not need in this episode?
Unfortunately, Odo was really missing in this episode. He has Quark come to his office briefly. Odo has realized that Quark has invited a bunch of unsavory characters onto the station, mm-hmm. and so he's like, "What's going on?" And Quark gives him his usual answer, but then Odo was basically gone from the rest of that point on.
It's true.
There was actually a small. Someone said something earlier in the episode. Kira says to Sisko, "The Klingon ship has left the station," and Sisko says, "All right, Odo can, you know, stand down now. He can relax." I thought that was funny, but he wasn't there to like experience it. It wasn't like, "Hey, Odo, you can go back and relax now," or you know, it's not like, "Oh, you've been up for 48 hours. You can go sleep now. You can go rejuvenate or whatever." He was gone. But other than that, like one scene, I can't really think of him ever being anywhere else. And Bashir definitely was a bit creepy. Which was hilarious, but other than that, I don't think there was anyone who did a bad job.
Yeah, I don't think anybody necessarily did a bad job, per se, but you're right. Odo was pretty much absent throughout this episode. You know, there really wasn't much for him to do, because, I mean, again, he's more of our security chief. He leads investigations. This was more of a, like, a scientific puzzle, so, of course, we see more of Jadzia here, and,
right.
and O'Brien, of course. They're kind of like the natural duo when things are when there's a mysterious whatever that's affecting the station, those two tend to be our go-tos. Bashir, of
and
course...
And we actually... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, Bashir, of course, is intentionally absent. You know, it's almost like, again,
they
just didn't have anything to do with him, so Q puts him to sleep for
that was
the
hilarious.
Whole episode. I
thought this episode was going to focus on him, because, of course, he's the one who opens the episode, so I thought it was going to be a Bashir-focused episode. And then when it turns out that he's like gone halfway through, he's out. And when he comes back onto this, on the promenade into Quark's later, he's like, "Did I miss anything?" And Dax just gives this enigmatic smile of like,
of
"You have no idea."
Right, right. We don't even have time for this, you know. Yeah. And so yeah, those two, I'll give it to you. Odo and Bashir are both, again, not that they were bad for what we saw them in. They were just, they were forgettable. They weren't really necessary throughout this episode, you know.
Absolutely. I do apologize if in the background you're hearing thunder. It seems to be pretty loud out there tonight. So.
Yeah, we've got a storm here in Texas, so...
yeah.
I mean, I don't mind. I actually like the rain. That means we're going to sleep very
well tonight.
Me too.
I don't like the humidity in the morning, but I like it when it's raining at night.
So when you guys are listening to this episode, when you hear those soft, dulcet tones of thunderstorms rolling across the Texas plains, just know that we were enjoying that as we slept tonight.
Woohoo!
So, we're coming right up on it here. What are your final thoughts and impressions of this episode?
I think Q is a great character to tie at least The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine together. And as we're recording this now, I do know that John DeLancey as Q reappears at the very least on... the Picard show.
Yes.
There's the trailer for Picard, the season 2, where he appears. So I know that he's still a character that shows up. And I understand he also shows up on Voyager. Is that correct?
Yes, he is on Voyager.
So
as
So I feel like he's a great character to tie the rest of the shows in together. Like, if the shows are a little more loosely related, then this one character who is able to, you know, just jump around between space and time. Well, I don't know if time exactly, but certainly space. You know, he could be wherever he wants.
Definitely time. He's got definitely time.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, he's a great character to tie the rest of the shows together as the same person entity that they all have to at some point kind of just deal with, not fight against, but just, you know, put up with and work around. He's a fun character for that reason. And I look forward to seeing him more on Deep Space Nine if he ever shows back up.
Well, sorry to burst your bubble, but he never returns to Deep Space Nine. We don't see Q again.
Really?
Unfortunately.
Oh, man.
No. That's the running joke, is that, you know, in Next Generation, Picard never hit him, so he just was always there and always a problem. Sisko punched him once, and he never came back. He scans the universe, and everybody's like, "What's that shadowy place?" And he's like, "That's Deep Space Nine. Sisko's there. Don't go there. We don't go there."
I got hit in my little mouth.
"What's that dark shadowy place?" "Oh, that's Deep Space Nine. Sisko's there, and he'll punch you." And he fights. He's a fighter.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, bummer. I mean, I think he's a fun character. I've showed up every now and then and just cause a little bit of havoc, but
why?
Too much of him would be a problem. Yeah. I definitely would say if he overstayed his welcome, that'd be a problem. But
You're right. He does show up. He's supposed to be in the second season of Star Trek Picard, which is set to air, I believe, in November. So we'll get to see that, and I'm actually looking forward to it. And here's why: obviously, you can't really do a Jean-Luc Picard story without Q. Those two characters,
100%.
I mean, from episode one of Next Generation,
right.
Q has been a part of Jean-Luc's story. So of course, if this is supposed to be the swan song of Jean-Luc Picard, this is his ending. Of course, Q has to be a part of it. And as we know from the series ender of Next Generation, Q tells Picard that, you know, the trial never ends. You know, so it...
I haven't finished Next Generation yet. You can't say
sorry.
You can't say it.
I thought you were done. I could have sworn you
No,
were.
Not yet. I still got some time left.
Spoilers.
No.
So anyway, forget I just said that. But but the reason that I bring it up, too, is because I really want to see a more adult version of their story. And what I mean by that is, you know, obviously Star Trek has changed a lot over the last 30 years or so that it's been out, and different creators have come along and added a lot to the show, and a show that was had certain restrictions on it because of not just the network that it was on and the rating, but also at the time in which it was being aired, they really couldn't do certain things, you know. So I'm wanting to see what a Picard Q story without some of those constraints are going to be, and how they can really up the grittiness of the story that they're trying to tell, of the importance that Jean-Luc plays to not just Starfleet but also to humanity. There's a lot about him and his story that ties into the development and the advancement of humanity that's again tied to Q, and we don't really see a whole lot of that. And so now to know that they're bringing this back and that they're going to try to, you know, give us that next bit of it, I really hope that they just run with it and don't, you know, don't get afraid of the Paramount shadow there and just really expand this storyline between these two and give us a story that's worthy of adult us. You know, like, again, I was watching this show when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. Now I'm 35. I want a story that matches me being older, more mature myself, aware of more things, and then giving me something that is a complex story, not something that's been dumbed down and simplified to fit a certain, you know, CBS PG-13 rating or whatever. So,
gotcha. Yeah, this isn't on normal television where, you know, a new episode airs every week. This is on a streaming service, so it has a little more chance to be a little more bold in its vision.
Right, gotcha. And give us a story that has more depth to it, that's not necessarily something that's solved in that 42 minutes of an episode run, right? Let them use the entire season to give us, you know, deep, impactful story that's going to last the whole season. Use that serialization to give us something that's way more complex than what we've ever seen before. And with these two characters in particular, again, Q and Jean-Luc Picard, I don't think that they can go wrong there. It has to be done well.
Right.
And that's what they're playing with, but I think they can do it, and I feel like there seems to be a lot of investment in them doing that.
Okay.
So hopefully we really get that and we're not let down with what we see here in season two. So to say that I'm excited is an understatement. I really can't wait. As much as Q annoys me, I understand his importance to Jean-Luc's life, and I really, really do want to see where they go with this. So, and I hope to also get a couple of cool cameos from some of the TNG crew, some of the Deep Space Nine crew as well. I feel like they're wholly underrepresented in all new Trek that we've got out right now. You know, the TNG cast has been popping up and stuff. The Voyager cast is all over the place, but Deep Space Nine, where you guys at? You know, like,
yeah.
Step up. I want to see Kira doing something. I want to see, you know, Jadzia. Well, okay. Anyway, I want to see them.
Don't tell me now.
Never mind. You know, O'Brien. You know, I want to see it. Where are you guys at? Like, give us more. You know, of those characters as well. We love them just as much as we loved everybody else. So, yeah, I'm really hoping for it.
Gotcha.
Man, this is a spoiler-heavy episode. I'm sorry.
Apparently. Gee whiz, Perry. No respect for the new guy.
I mean, I try to contain my enthusiasm as best I can, but as you guys can clearly see, I really, really love Star Trek, and it's just hard sometimes. Well, I think that is going to take us right to the end. So, once again, guys, thank you ever so much for listening to us here on The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. And again, you can find us on Spotify, Google, Amazon, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. I particularly always go to Spotify.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. We appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you next week.